Welcome to the Church Podcast, talking all things ministry to help you do church better. I'm your co-host, John Rinaldo, and I'm sitting here alongside Mr. Chris Wesley. Chris, do you prefer Christopher or Chris?
That's a great question. You know, I don't have a firm answer. I respond to either or. What I don't like is when people can't decide and they go back and forth and they call me Chris at one point and then Christopher at another point. I'm just like, you know, call me whatever. So, dude, it's your call. It's your call.
Can I call you, hey man, what up, dude? Does that work for you?
No, not at all. Stick with Chris or Christopher, or you can call me Wesley. I mean, you know, that's what I was called in high school, if you want to go retro like that.
I never thought about it. Chris Wesley. It kind of is two first names, isn't it?
Well, it's funny. I got a really quick story that has nothing to do with what we're going to talk about, but I just feel inclined to tell it. So in middle school, there was this kid who I thought had one of the best names in the world, Hampton Howell, right? So Hampton, if you're somehow in church ministry listening to this podcast, shoot me an email. But Hampton Howell, he was from South Carolina. He moved up to New Jersey where we were living. And, you know, one day we're just, it was a snowy day. We had all gone sledding, Hampton and a bunch of my other friends and I, and we're hanging around sipping some hot chocolate. And Hampton goes, hey, Wesley, what's your first name? What's your last name? And I was like, it's Wesley. And he's like, dude, your name's Wesley Wesley? And everyone started laughing. And I'd known the kid for about like 3 months at that point, but he did not know my first name. And so it was just, it was kind of funny because I was just like, what was funny is he was perplexed by my name possibly being Wesley Wesley. But at the same time, I wanted to be like, dude, your name's Hampton Howell. Like, you know, that's...
That's so great. You know, but, when I think of Wesley, like honestly, like this is a throwback. I now can no longer think about anything but Star Trek Generation and Wesley Crusher, you know, which was played by what's his name? All right, forget his name. Anyways.
So. Yeah, no, I know who you're talking about. But yeah, no, I mean, I was hoping you'd say all I think about is Wesley Snipes, but all right.
Anyway, no, actually, not until you said it. I didn't think about Wesley Snipes at all. So.
Yeah, there's not too many famous first name Wesleys out there, but those are, I think, two admirable ones. Although Wesley Snipes ended up in jail,
Wesley Crusher is a fictional character.
right. Wesley Snipes, though, he was in jail for, I think, tax evasion. So I guess that's an excusable offense. I don't know, whatever. But
let's not
for celebrities, it is right. Right? Yeah. I don't know. He served his time, though. Anyway, so. I assume you're bringing up that question because of today's topic.
No, I just was curious. So, you know, I'm not the king of transitions like you are. I just like go straight into it. So,
well, let me transition then. Let me pivot this one.
You go.
I mean, the most important thing that you can know about a person is their name, right? Because when you know someone by name, like they feel loved and they feel valued and they feel known, right? I mean, you think of another great show, Cheers, you know, where everybody knows your name and that's why you go back there. And the reason it's important to know someone's name is not just because you show them value, but then you can introduce them into your life. And that's kind of the topic around evangelization. There you go, John.
Look at that. Teeing it up. You know, really, Chris, you are amazing at these transitions. So kudos.
Well, I did improv comedy, so I had to, like, I could never learn to negate. I always had to learn how to, like, weave it back and forth.
Yeah. Anyway. We should do a podcast on improv, you know, at some point. Or not. Oh.
you just broke the first rule, which is you never negate an idea. I would have said yes, even if it was a bad idea. I would have said yes and made it work. But anyway, no, but moving on. So evangelization, it's a huge part of our faith. In Rick Warren's Purpose-Driven Life, he says it's a huge value in our own personal faith journey. And as a Catholic church, we're called to evangelize. But we're not just going to talk about evangelization as this big, broad subject. We're going to more bring it back to something that's caught your attention, something you've been diving into deeper recently. John, why don't you tell a little bit of the backstory behind that?
Yeah, absolutely. Right now I'm teaching a course on faith, youth, and culture for graduate students at Santa Clara University who are all in ministry. And in this particular course, we're spending a lot of time talking about evangelization and catechesis. And so as a framework, you know, I wanted to go back to Pope Paul VI's document, Evangelization in the Modern World, which was written in 1975. And I had read it before, but I didn't do a deep dive on it like I did this time. And I found it to be really eye-opening, quite honestly, to kind of go back to this document that's older than I am and realize, wow, they were really onto something in terms of evangelization and what this means. And so I thought it would be good for us, since we are an evangelizing church, that's really what we're about. We've talked about it in previous podcasts, you know, buzzwords, evangelization, what do we mean by that? Let's go back to the source. Well, not quite the source, because the source is really Jesus, right? But really kind of delving into
it. Oh man. It's two episodes in a row. He's Jesus juked us all, everybody. Let's go back to the source. But you can't do that. You can't do that. Like, let's go back to the source. Well, we really, it's Jesus, you know? All right.
Well, okay.
It's like, what's the answer to every single faith question? Jesus.
Yeah. All right. You have to remember I'm an extrovert. So what happens is I'm stream of conscious. So I say something and then I correct myself in the process. So that's what I did just now. So.
Right. Okay. All right. Go ahead. Know, sorry.
So I want to go back to this, and I really encourage everyone to go back and take a look at this document. Pope Paul VI, in 1975, wrote Evangelization in the Modern World. And it really was in response to the conclusion of the Second Vatican Council in 1965. So this was intentionally written as a document to be 10 years after the close of the Vatican Council, and to really kind of be a bellwether, kind of where are we at? Like, let's check in. Where are we at with implementing what's happening in the Vatican Council and on this evangelization topic? You know, and really it allowed for him to take this anniversary and to focus it back onto what it is that we are about as a Catholic church, as a Christian people, about evangelization. And so, you know, time and time again in this document, he really kind of goes back to this idea of 10 years ago when we did this at the Vatican Council. And so that's kind of some of the origins and history of this, but I still think it has a lot for us today. In terms of what we do, and really the way he defines evangelization, I think is really key. And so we're going to spend some time talking a little bit about how evangelization is defined and in what context evangelization takes place. What are the means of evangelization that he named in 1975, and how I think it's still important for us today. So Chris, with your permission, I think we should delve right into this.
Go for it. I've got my scuba diving gear and my underwater flashlight. I am ready to go deeper into this. No, I think it's such an important subject because, again, I think we get stuck on the surface of so many of these topics. And, you know, I don't know if this is the right analogy, but it's like rearranging, you know, furniture on the Titanic when, you know, just like focused on all these like small, unimportant thing, well, not unimportant, but small like details while there's a huge problem that needs to be fixed.
Yeah, sure. And this goes back to what we've talked about many times in previous episodes is the why, right? What is the why behind what we do? Well, folks, this is the why behind what we do. And I have to remember this for myself too. And I think that's why I got so excited about this particular topic and delving into this document a little bit, because this is the why. And it gave me, as I delved into this document more and got a chance to talk to my students about this, it gave me even more fervor around evangelization, around my ministry, around the work that I do, that I felt energized. I felt like I had almost a repurposing of why I do what I do. And I think that's why it's helpful to go into this stuff again and remind ourselves, even if it's something that was written way before our time, it's still pertinent in the work that we do today in the 21st century.
Right. Yeah, definitely. So what's the biggest takeaway that you've had from the document? What's the first thing that sticks out that you want to tackle?
I think the first thing that sticks out for me is what evangelization really is. And I think he really clearly defines evangelization in this document, and really with four different ideas. Evangelization, and this is going to be a no-brainer for a lot of us, I think we understand this, but evangelization really is about proclaiming the kingdom. I mean, plain and simple, we proclaim the kingdom of God, right? You know,
Break that down a little bit further, because proclaiming the kingdom, like, not that that's a buzzword, but that's a church word, right?
Yeah, sure.
And so, you know, right now we're talking church talk, right? But, you know, if someone's walking in and they're like, okay, proclaiming the kingdom, does that mean I go out and say, the kingdom is here? You know, like, what does that exactly mean?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Well, let's wait for that, okay? Because let's define this a little bit further, these things, because Pope Paul VI does this in his document. He's like, this is what we mean by this. This is how we do this. So let's stick with definition here a little bit. Chris is mad at me.
Proclaiming the kingdom. I'm mad at it. Yeah, I'm still my caveman like thinking is just like, we're using too many syllables. But go ahead.
Yeah, so proclaiming the kingdom really is very much about, like, look, we live in a fallen world, right? That this is an imperfect world, and that Jesus Christ came to earth to proclaim the kingdom, and the kingdom through God, through him, and that's what we need to really focus in on, and realizing that where we're at now, although is really important, is really also temporal, right? You know, that it's not permanent, and that the permanentness is where we should be focusing our time and energy on, which is the kingdom of God, which is really the second piece of evangelization, is that it's proclaiming salvation. So we're proclaiming the kingdom, we're claiming salvation. Salvation of what? Salvation of Jesus Christ. Okay, so what does that mean? Salvation of Jesus Christ. What does that mean? Well, again, we go back to this idea of original sin. We go back to Adam and Eve, you know, that we are a fallen people. We're a fallen earth. We're a fallen people. And the entire Bible is the story of Jesus, of God trying to reclaim his people, you know, through whatever means necessary, and ultimately leading to this idea of Jesus coming on this earth and preaching salvation, preaching that we are a saved people, because Jesus decided to take the sin of the world upon himself and die on the cross and take it with him into hell, right? You know, and that we are saved because of that. We because of God's grace, we are saved. And so that this idea of proclaiming the kingdom, proclaiming salvation, there is no other good news more gooder, if that's even a word, than that. You know, and that's what we really need, I think, today, is this idea of, like, you know, we are a fallen people, but we're saved. Chris, you've got this face.
And it's like, all right, I understand what you're saying, because I've grown up in the church and I've understood it. And I think in church dialogue, we can have these conversations and get ourselves excited about it. Mm-hmm. But this is where I think we hit such a roadblock with evangelization. Is you say that to an unchurched person,
sure,
and it really doesn't make any sense. Mm-hmm. Like, or if it does, it sounds fantastical, right? Like, kind of like almost like this doesn't like exist or really happen. So what I would say is, you know, all right, proclaiming the kingdom, salvation, broken people. Like, I think everyone would agree that we live in a broken world where there's just a lot of messed up stuff going on and things that that just aren't right or could be better. But I think what we need to look at is, okay, if I'm saved through Christ, if there's salvation with Christ, what does that mean? So what I usually do is I look at, like, one of my favorite readings to look at is John 10:10, right? A thief comes to steal, kill, and destroy. I came so that you may have life and live it more abundantly, right? So the way that I look at it is that Jesus came to bring us salvation, but not just to save us, like, in, you know, I think where my mind goes is like a superhero saving, you know, someone who is like in need of like this huge disaster, but comes in and brings clarity to, like, you know, the fact that life is going to have pain, it's going to have hurt, it's going to be broken, but like to numb that, to avoid that, to rely on other things, is you're going to miss out on a whole bunch of great things going on out there. And that having a relationship with Jesus Christ, having a relationship with the church, what that does is it means getting the fullness of that experience that that you would miss out on if you tried any other method. And I think that's a lie that the world presents, is, and that's what we all crave, is we want the full experience. We don't want to miss out. We're, you know, it's that fear of missing out. And you miss out if you trust the world, but you don't miss out if you trust Christ, because you're going to have someone who guides you with wisdom and word. You're going to have someone that you, that gives you presence and makes you feel like you're never alone. And someone who's going to give you purpose of, like, even though, like, what we're doing, the focus needs to be on the kingdom, that what we do here is not just wait till the day we die, but that there's a purpose here that helps us lead into that next purpose. So I don't know if that's like a better job. Like, I'm not claiming it's a better job of explaining it than the Pope would, but, like, you know, I think sometimes where we in church world get a little stuck is we get stuck with the language and we never bother to translate.
Absolutely. No, and I think that's really helpful. And I think that's a really good challenge, you know, for us, you know, that the reality is there are two types of attachments in the world, right? That we are attached to things of the world, right? And I can think of many things that I'm personally attached to that I really need to let go of. And then there's the attachment to Christ, right? You know, and it's exactly what you were saying, basically. It's like the world provides one thing, God provides another. And in some places, it's a conflict. It's a challenge in the idea that I need to move more towards Christ. I need to move more towards God. And the only way I can do that is to shed some of the attachments I have of the world. And that this idea of evangelization is obviously not just a one-time thing, that I'm still struggling through this journey myself too, you know, as well as everybody else. And so I'm constantly trying to better myself and attach myself to the idea of going back to Pope Paul VI, where the kingdom and salvation and what that's provided in Christ. And I think where the document is really powerful is he talks about six means of how evangelization happens. You know, so, okay, we defined it a little bit. You know, there's a couple other pieces that he defines it. Obviously, you know, evangelization is salvation, the kingdom is available to all and is absolutely the essential mission of the church. Okay, so the essential mission of the church, how do we do it, right? So again, in 1975, he wrote these things, and I think they're still pertinent today. And I think I want to remind myself that these are the areas, this is how we evangelize in the world today. So he said these six things, and we'll kind of break them down a little bit. But number one, I don't know if he put them in order of importance, but this was number one. We need to witness authentically a Christian life, you know? And so you can't evangelize what you are not, right? You know,
right.
You know,
right.
You only evangelize who you are. So if you are addicted to candy, you know, which, well, I am, you know, I'm going to evangelize, you know, addiction to candy. But if I'm not addicted to candy, right? If I'm not connected to candy, then I'm not going to show that. It's such a stupid example. But the idea is, like, my kids love candy because I love candy, right? Because I've modeled candy to them. Well, let's now put the face of the church on this. It's like, if I model to my kids what it means to be a good Christian and live this good life, well, then they're going to be modeled by that, and they're going to want to do that as well. And I think the key word that Pope Paul VI uses is authentic. I think there are times I've been an inauthentic Christian.
Right. What do you mean by inauthentic? Like, because I agree with you 100%. I think this is great, but, like, break down
I fake it, you know? It's like, you know, I need to put on a face and make myself look better than I actually am. And because I know that people know that I work in ministry, people know that I'm passionate about that. This is my vocation, right? And so there are times that I want to make sure that I don't, ruin my reputation, right? you know, mm-hmm. it, you know, and so do I, and sometimes it's not lying per se, but it's not showing my entire self to the world.
Right, right.
You know, like authentically Christian means like, yes, do I have my stuff together sometimes? But being authentically Christian also means I don't have my stuff all together and I'm working towards getting all my stuff together, right? You know,
right.
I think, and especially in this day of social media, we really hide our true selves and we present a one side of us, you know, and we all fall into that trap of social media. But again, how are we authentically Christian? If I am a perfect Christian, which God knows I'm not, nobody wants to follow that because the reality is the Christian life is difficult. And being authentically Christian means here's what I'm doing well, but dude, here's where I'm struggling. Here's where I have doubts. Here's where I'm a sinner and I'm working on this. And this right. is part of who I am. And I think we hide that from the world.
Yeah, no, definitely. I mean, and I think that's an excellent point because so many times we want to, now it's funny, we not only want to portray that we're the perfect Christian, but we're the perfect parent, we're the perfect spouse, we're the perfect child, and then when that gets exposed, the imperfections, it blows up in a huge damaging way. So I think it's really important that we and it's not like putting all your junk out there and saying like, hey, this is who I am. It's about you know, having real relationships with people and saying like, yeah, I struggle with that too. Mm-hmm. Or saying, you know what, I had a really rough day. And if people question that and say like, well, I thought you were Christian and things like that. Well, yeah, like even, you know, even Jesus got angry. He flipped over tables and things like that. But like, you know, but also saying like at the same time, I'm a human, you know, I make mistakes. Like yeah. I mess up. But I know that I have a God who loves me and will forgive me or who has already forgiven me.
And in a world where most people aren't authentic, myself included, I think we human beings are strangely attracted to people who are authentic. Like it's almost like it's a gut feeling, right? We know it's like, mm-hmm. there's something different about this person. And maybe I can't name it right now, but I think in many cases, this is idea that this person is who they say they are. They present their good self, their bad self, and I know what I'm getting when I'm with this individual. And in a world where sometimes you just don't know what you're getting when you're talking with people, and we kind of put up our guards, right, because we have been burned in the past or whatnot, when we encounter authentic people, we are attracted to it.
Right.
We don't even know why, I think, in right. many cases. And I think definitely. That's an important piece. So.
Right. So that's the first one, is living a Christ life. What's number two?
Number two is, and he comes time and time again to this, the importance and necessity of preaching. All right. Mm. You know, now he certainly spent some energy talking about the homily. And you know, those of you who are priests listening to us, the homily becomes an important means of evangelization. And so, go back to that document. He certainly preaches and talks about that. But I think just as importantly, those of us in ministry leader, we quote unquote preach through our other ministerial opportunities. You're a youth mm-hmm. ministry leader and you're leading a youth night, you're
right.
doing a faith formation, you know, and you're leading a volunteer catechist training, right? That these are opportunities also for quote unquote preaching, right? Where we do have the opportunities as lay people to preach, just not in the formal setting of the homily.
Right.
How do we share that story, right? A few episodes ago, we talked about our own story, the importance of us as storytellers. Part of storytelling is that aspect of it's preaching, right? You know, and it's telling the good news through that preaching.
Cool. Yeah, no. And I think that's something that we're definitely working on. I know in our church with youth ministry is helping students know their story and helping parents know their story. Yeah. So that they can share that. And, you know, that's something that I think, and we've mentioned this before, Dr. Bob McCarty mentions in his book where, you know, what the next generation is craving are people who can articulate their faith clearly. And,
yeah.
and that's definitely a part of that preaching.
Yeah, absolutely. All right. Number three, this is a no-brainer for us, but yeah, we kind of know this as churches. It's through catechetical instruction. But I just, if I could say one thing, catechetical instruction, catechesis, This is one item of six that he names as a means of evangelization. I think, if anything, we as church have defaulted to catechesis as the primary means of evangelization. It is important. Don't hear me wrong in saying that. But we have to do the other things as well. And catechesis is just one aspect of evangelization, not the only tool of evangelization.
Well, and to kind of give like a similar example, a much smaller example is like cooking, right? So, there was a point where in my late teens, I wanted to learn how to cook. And I just looked at cookbooks, but it never taught me the techniques. It never taught me, you know, how to, I mean, I could read about the techniques and everything like that. But it wasn't until like my grandmother showed me how to do these things and modeled these things. And it wasn't until, I experimented a little bit with different recipes that I really started to learn how to cook. If I had just looked at cookbooks and expected to be successful in that way, then I would have been okay, but I wouldn't have enjoyed it as much as I do now. And looking at the story behind the ingredients and how certain spices mix together to create other like flavors and aromas. And I think that's important. It's just like with faith. So for sure.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I think number four and five in terms of the means of evangelization. And again, go back and read the document. I think it's powerful and you can find it on the Vatican website for free. Number four, means of evangelization through technology. 1975, he's saying, we need to evangelize through technology. Now, the technology of the time, 1975, was different than what it is today. But even then, they recognized what a powerful tool the technology is in terms of spreading the good news, right? And at that time, it was certainly your radio, but TV, right? You know, Fulton Sheen, right? Bishop Fulton Sheen, I mean, he's like the prime example of how you use the technology of the modern world to evangelize. But just right after that, number five is, and it's still a person-to-person thing, right? So he says four and five is like a technology, but still person-to-person. Like the technology does not replace the authentic face-to-face interaction that we have. And I think this is a particular challenge for us, as we all know, in the 21st century with social media. And we think social media relationships are authentic or real. And they are important. I'm not saying they're not, because I love social media. I'm a big fan of that. But still, face-to-face is such an important means of how we do evangelization. That technology and social media can never fully replace the face-to-face interaction that we have with individuals.
Well, yeah, the way I look at it is technology is like casting the net, right? It's like throwing, it's like throwing seeds out into the field, hoping that something sticks or something, catches right there, right? But where with the one-on-one, that's the more intentional, that's the nurturing and massaging and everything like that. So, I mean, for me, I think, definitely it's that balance. And some people will lean more one way than the other. For me, like I do a much better job with the authentic interaction, a one-on-one interaction, where with other people, I know for them, they're masters of technology and social media and spreading it out that way. And yeah, we're always going to kind of lean one way or the other. And it's just sitting in that tension, I think, and realizing where to go for sure.
Yeah. And as we wrap up, really the last one I think is most important, the means of evangelization is number six, it must touch life. So what does he mean by that? What we do in church must connect to our real lives.
Right.
And I think that's one of the reasons why people walk away from church, is because people think it has no bearing on our lives in any way, shape, or form. It's just this nice thing that we do on Sunday and really does not affect Monday through Saturday.
Right, right.
Faith evangelization must touch life. It must catch people where they're at and bring them into a new reality in Christ, to go back to some of our church language, right? And it can't just be Sunday, folks. It just got to touch life. It's got to change me in some way, shape, or form, or it's meaningless.
Right.
Meaningless.
No, that's definitely true. Like, yeah, you can't keep them separate. It's not checklist. It's not just, church over here, life over here. They've got to be mixed together. And that's why for me, even for those of us who work in church world, we really have to take into consideration the places that we're working is also the place that we're worshiping and where our community is forming. And it creates a lot of complexity. Like, I definitely agree with that. But in the benefits, I feel, always outweigh the negatives. That the benefits outweigh the consequences, in the sense where, if I form community around the church that I go to, that I have people who share the same values, who pray the same way that I do, that love Jesus and serve in a similar way that I do, supporting me and my family and rallying forward. Where if it's kind of like I live in these two different worlds, there's going to be disconnect, and it's going to be a lot harder for people to help me. So I think that's great. I mean, and John, on behalf of all the caveman-like thinking Catholics out there, I appreciate you breaking down this document. I can't wait to reread it and then put it down and say, like, I still don't understand. But
That's fair.
no. I really did enjoy it, and I think those are six steps that, even though they were written, in 1975, they're still relevant today.
Absolutely.
And there's something that, we throw around the buzzword evangelization, new evangelization, but really, the definition's right there, and it's pretty clear. It gives you pretty clear steps. In fact, you can make a blog post out of it, for sure.
I plan to.
He plans to. All right. So, but anyway, this is great. So just, remember, those six steps, and help me out here, John. It's living an authentic Christian life.
The importance and necessity of preaching,
Right.
catechetical instruction through technology and person to person, and ultimately it must touch life.
Awesome. So, if you guys want more information on that, maybe we can post a link to the 1975 document on the
Yeah,
Vatican website.
absolutely.
And if you got questions, shoot them our way to questions@thechurchpodcast.org. Or you can just visit our website, thechurchpodcast.org. You can reach out to me on social media, Chris R. Wesley, on Twitter and Instagram. I'm on LinkedIn, Marathon Youth Ministry with Facebook, or marathonyouthministry.com. John, they can find you all over the web too, right?
Just, Google search down Ronaldo. You'll find
Whoa. Whoa.
I'm
He's
trying to
gotten
make it
so.
easy, though.
You're trying to make it easy. See, when people Google Christopher Wesley, they get some German soccer, field hockey player.
Oh, here you go.
So, yeah, there's a.
I haven't Googled myself in a while. Maybe I should go back and take a look at it. I'm pretty sure my Twitter stream comes up first, I think, when I Google. So anyway, so johnronaldo.com, my website, at John Ronaldo on Twitter, and on Facebook and Instagram at John M. Ronaldo.
And if you haven't sent in a picture of your stink face yet, please do so to questions@thechurchpodcast.org. And if you're not sure what we're talking about, listen to the last episode. But anyway, thank you all for joining us. We love you very much, and we'll see you next time.
Peace.
Take care.